Accession number 27805, Mr. Peter Laker, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about this combined operations unit you went to at Bembridge between November 43 and about March 44. Now, you don't remember much about this, do you?
Well, other than that, we were placed in a holiday camp at Bembridge and we were taken by a coach each day to Freshwater Bay, where the landing craft were allocated. And I did remember going out to several, but what I actually did whilst I was there, I have really no idea. It was frankly very boring from what I remember, and that's why I subsequently applied to go back to R&B Portsmouth for draft to a ship, because it was hopeless where I was, and I had no idea what I was there for and doing to do.
Now, so what happened about your next posting then?
Well, I went back to Royal Naval Barracks in Portsmouth, and the drafting chap, he said, what did I want to do? And I told him I wanted to go back to sea, and he said, well, they're building new frigates in America. Would you like one of those? So I said, yes, I'm interested. And within a couple of days, I got a draft to go over to America to pick up a ship called HMS Bentinck. Yeah. Within 2 days, I had this draft to go to the States to pick up this newly built frigate that the Americans were building for us. And I then was transferred up to Glasgow to board a troop ship, and I can't remember the name of the troop ship, but it was a fast voyage over, unaccompanied, and we arrived over in the States within about 5 days, if my memory is correct.
Nothing about the voyage that you remember?
No.
Would this be March?
Yes.
Or April?
Yeah, March.
44?
Yeah.
Now, what happened when you got to America?
Well, we arrived in New York, and we all thought that we were going to have a very nice time in New York for at least a few days, but no such luck, because they drafted us into a hotel which was run by the United States Royal Navy Force, and we weren't allowed ashore that night at all. We had to stay in the hotel. And the following day, they transferred us up to Boston to go to the yard where they were building this new frigate.
Now, what happened when you got there to Boston? Because there's a bit of a scene when you arrive, when you first see your ship.
Well, when we arrived in Boston, it was quite unusual, because we went to the dockyard. We had one officer with us, and about 8 or 9 of us, and no one knew anything at all about this ship, HMS Bentinck. And after a lot of messing about for about an hour and a half, we did in fact find out that it had a number, but I can't remember what the number was. We then said, whereabouts is this number? And they said, well, that was down in dry dock something or other. We got instructions as to how to get there. And you'll have to appreciate we were carrying all our kit with us all the time. Anyway, when we arrived at the dock was empty, and we couldn't find anybody to hand. Eventually, the officer did find an office which apparently was responsible for this dock, and he went in and saw these people and asked what was happening. And they came out and said, well, you see those cases over there? We said, yes. He said, well, that's your ship. And we couldn't quite figure out what he meant, because we had no idea the extent of the prefabrication that they were doing in the States in regard to shipbuilding. And so he said to us, go away and come back in 2 weeks and your ship will be practically ready. It'll be built. He said, you can go on board then. And we thought, this is a bit crazy. Anyway, the officer said, right, well, you can have 14 days leave, And anyway, he fixed us up with some billets. And away we went to the billets.
Now, what were the billets? Was it, there was Fargo Barracks there. Was it there?
Yes, it was in the barracks there.
Now, what were the billets? They were in a, was it an old... What, tell me about the Fargo Barracks.
Well, as far as I can remember, it was an old United States premises. And they weren't very interested in us, and all, to all accounts. And we just ambled around the area for a couple of weeks, using, the, of course, the United States Navy Club and that sort of thing.
Did you have any duties at all?
None at all, none whatsoever.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the Americans, the civilians?
We got on quite well with them, actually, because they were, we were a novelty, so far as they were concerned. And they were very interested in all we had to tell them about the war in Europe and the likes. So that took quite a bit of time, and we were always, I would say, popular in that direction.
And what sort of recreations did you, was it supplied for you, or did you have to make your own fun?
Well, that was supplied in a way. They were, they went over, I suppose, in a way, out of their way to try and accommodate us, but we weren't very, shall we say, keen on doing much. We just wanted to get on the ship.
Now, what happened next then? After about 2 weeks?
We went back to the dockyard and found their officer. And there, and lo and behold, was a ship in the dry dock, fully built. But, of course, there was a lot of interior work being done to connect up pipes and wires and so forth. But in general sense, the ship was, to all intents and purposes, built.
Now, what happened there? Did you have duties as a, you know, in your capacity as a
Dusty? Yeah, yes. I was then sent by the officer down to the victualling store to make arrangements for the victualling of the ship when it was able to take the goods on board, and that took up about 5 days.
So, what did you have to actually do?
Well, I had to give them some idea as to what I wanted in regard to stores. For example, how much beef, how much lamb, how much, how many eggs, butter, milk, sugar, and everything you can think of for storing a ship.
And were there any problems, or was it easy?
No, there weren't any problems. The Americans, in all senses, bent over backwards to accommodate us. Nothing was too much trouble, and you could have as much as you wanted without any question.
And did you actually go aboard ship at this stage, or were you still living ashore?
Still living ashore for about another week, and then we went aboard and lived aboard, so to speak, except of course we used the dockyard shower and washing facilities, toilets, and that sort of thing.
Now, this ship was HMS Benting, and she'd be of the 4th Escort Group eventually.
That's right, yeah.
So when would you first go aboard? That would be April, I presume.
Yes, April, yeah.
And could you give us a sort of description of the ship? Because they were unusual ships, weren't they?
They were
the same as British ships.
Yes, they were. They were really, in all intents and purposes, luxury liners compared to the British destroyers, because everybody had a bunk, and there were shower areas and washing areas. You could wash clothes in an area, and you had also two very large, one was a freezer and the other one was a fridge, in which you could store food for anything up to 3 months supply. And in addition to that, you could walk from the bows to the stern undercover, which meant that even in the worst of weather, you didn't have to go on the upper deck to get to the stern of the vessel.
And what armament did the ship have? It was a frigate, wasn't it?
Yes. They had 3 3-inch guns, 2 on the bows, fore end, and 1 on the stern. And we had a lot of anti-aircraft, short-range guns. I think we had a couple of Bofors amidship, and we had quite a number of Oricans to help us.
Now, what was your mess deck like? Were you in a separate mess deck or a mess room? Or where were you?
I was in the forward part of the ship because beneath the bridge area, there were two messes, one that I was in and another one further forward than that. And my office was actually in the mess area, so it was very handy from my point of view.
Were you in a special deck, or was it just a normal mess deck? Were you in with the rest of the crew, or you in?
Yes, I was in with the rest of the crew.
And what did you think of the mess deck? I mean, the facilities. I mean, for a start, how did you prefer bunks as compared to hammocks?
Well, the benefit of bunks was you definitely had a place to sleep, whereas when you were aboard the British ship, you had to sling hammocks and the like. And probably, in most cases, it wasn't easy for all the mess to sleep in the mess.
And you had more room, generally?
Considerably, yes, considerably. And it was really a paradise compared to what I had on the V&W.
Now, there were US-style facilities on these ships, that things that just weren't on. Things like a freezer and all sorts of things. Can you just describe the sort of facility you weren't used to that were on there?
Well, in the fore part of the ship, in the deck below the mess, there was this big, large freezer and equally sized fridge. And it did enable me to put a lot of frozen food into that and also into the freezer that I could not have had if I'd been on the British ships. And the crew, of course, were able to have general messing at that time. And it was my job to arrange the menus and provide the galley with the food that they required.
Could you explain general messing as opposed to canteen messing?
Well, general messing as opposed to canteen messing, general messing meant that I, in fact, as the supply assistant, did in fact prepare the menus and subject, of course, to agreement with the galley as to what I was proposing and also with the officer who was in charge of me. Each week, so I did a menu each week, and I had knowledge of what I had in store, and that would enable me to be sure that I could supply that menu.
Do you think the food was as good with general messing, or?
I think it really was, because it was in charge of the cooks, and the cooks obviously were trained to do the task, and they did it very well. They could cook bread and keep us with fresh bread throughout the voyage.
Now, anything else about the ships, the HMS Bentinck? I mean, one thing was it was actually built. It was going to be the commander, the group leader of 4th Escort Group, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the group leader. We had on board a commander and three or four officers, which were his staff. One was a navigator, one was a signals officer, and one was a gunnery officer, I believe. And then in addition to that, we did have our own captain, and he had his officers, about seven, so that should it occur that the command was required to move from Bentinck to, say, Byard or Calder, the commander would go and take his officers with him, and we would be able to continue with our captain and also his officers.
Now, so what happened? You were on board the ship. Now, what's the process of getting the ship ready? Because you can't just go, can you? There's working up trials, and then, well, there's the sea trials, and there's working up trials, which are probably in the Bahamas. Now, what happened to you?
We went from, the crew came over from United Kingdom, and we then, after about 2 weeks, we did in fact sail and go down to the Bahamas, where we did some exercises, and then we went to the Azores.
Do you know what they were doing at the Bahamas?
Well, we were doing things like, I seem to remember, we were doing depth charge practice and also gunnery practice, the Americans provided us with some targets, which we obviously shot at. And we seemed to do what I could call General C preparing for coming into being an operative ship within the Royal Navy.
Now, you were the leading supply assistant, you know, you were a leading hand at that time.
Yeah.
Did you have an action station as well?
Yes, I had an action station at that time, being the fore repair party, so that should the ship in the bows area become damaged, then I was part of that damage repair party.
Now, you didn't have any training for that. I mean, were you given any training in damage repair?
Given no training whatsoever.
Did you know what you were meant to do? I mean,
well, obey orders probably is the best answer to that. But I never had to find out how to do the job, because the ship was never damaged, luckily.
So you're at the Bahamas. Where then?
We went to the Azores, and then finally back to Belfast.
Now, anything happened on the way?
No, it was quite an uneventful journey. It was a working up journey, as you might sort of say, getting used to the ship, doing a lot of action stations and exercises en route within the ship to make sure that we were efficient, as near as possible anyway, by the time we got back to England.
Now, what happened when you got to Pollock Dock? You'd been there before, but anything changed?
No, nothing had changed from when I was there before. It was more ships there, of course, because fifth escort group was there as well, the Duckworth and her six ships. So there were quite a few of us at times.
Now, do you remember the composition of fourth escort group?
Well, I can only remember that we had the Bayard and Calder, which were similar to us, diesel. And then we had the diesel electrics, and I can remember the Drury, Paisley, and I can't remember what the third one was of that particular type.
Were you a close-knit group? I mean, did you actually get to know the crews of the other ships, or was it pretty just formal?
No, I don't think we did get to know each other very well. It seemed as if we lived with our own crew, so to speak, and didn't fraternise with anybody else, at least not when I was going ashore.
Now, what was the role of the 4th Escort Group at this stage?
Well, the main thing when I joined her was we were taking the first new army out to Naples and bringing the old 1st Army and 8th Army back from Italy in readiness for the invasion of Europe.
Now, what were those journeys like? So you go to Naples?
Yes.
What were those journeys like?
Well, they were, I suppose, quite ordinary by general standards in the Atlantic, because there were six of us and we were deployed round these troop ships. And we used to go about a thousand miles out into the Atlantic, and then south for 1,000 miles, and then 1,000 miles back into Gib. And we always came through Gib at night, where we were joined by additional ships to take us through the Mediterranean as far as necessary, when the fighter control aeroplanes could help us from Italy. The ships from Gibraltar turned back when there was air cover.
Now, what do you remember of these trips? I mean, I think it was called the Millionaire's Run at one point.
Well, they were quite often hairy at times, with the Germans coming over bombing and the Italians also.
How were those bombing attacks like?
Well, they were pretty hectic in the sense that at one time they had, I was told, a bomb which was they could control by radio, and that enabled them to direct the bomb onto the shipping below, But then they came up, across an American destroyer that joined us that had some apparatus which, shall we say, bugged this system, and that was helpful.
So anything else you remember about these trips?
Well, when we got to Naples, of course, we went into the bay and anchored, and the troop ships discharged their cargo, so to speak, and we were able to go ashore for about 4 or 5 days, and we went to Pompeii and various other places. And one thing that I did enjoy was going to the San Carlos Opera House in Naples, where we could get a ticket for 50 lira, and 50 lira was in fact 5 shillings, so it wasn't very expensive. And we heard the singing of several renowned Italians and chorus as well, and it was very good to listen to it. It initiated me into opera in many ways.
Did you get on well with the Italians? Because the war had ended with the Italians by then.
Practically, yes. Yes, I think we distrusted the... I distrusted the Italians. I had no time for them, personally. And I must say that I wasn't very enamoured with them at all. But one rather interesting thing which I found... I was a Catholic at that time, and I went to the Catholic Church to a Mass on the Sunday, which I was allowed to go by the ship. And when I got in, I was quite amazed at the number of people walking round the church whilst the service was on. Anyway, there came the time for the collection, and I don't know whether it's peculiar to me, but I put a 50 lira note in the collection, and this was... noted by the collector of the alms, and he went up and told the priest that I'd given so much, and the priest sort of looked down upon me and nodded his head and thanks. And then they had another collection later on in the service, and I did the same thing, and I didn't think anything of it, but it didn't enamour me with the Catholic Church, that they were more concerned with those who were giving whilst in the church than necessary.
Now, anything? Were you ever attacked by submarines? Because you did these trips backwards and forwards, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Any submarine attacks?
No, not that I can remember. We had probably 2 or 3 scares, but we never saw one. We never, as far as I'm aware, we never ever sunk one.
So, anything else about this 6 or 7 months? It's during the period of D-Day and then deep towards the end of 44.
Yes. Well, we kept on doing these trips. And, of course, the longer the war went on, so to speak, the easier, in general, the trips became, because we no longer, at the end, went out into the Atlantic anywhere near that 1,000 miles. We simply went almost across the Bay of Biscay and down to Gib that way, so it shortened the journey quite a bit.
But nothing in particular happened. It was a routine period for you.
It seemed more or less routine, yeah.
Any changes to your duties as a leading hand?
No, it remained the same throughout the time I was on the Banting. My duties never changed. I recall on one occasion I had a gallon of rum, which was surplus to the official amount that I should have had. And I went and saw the gunner and explained it to him that I couldn't account for it. Whereupon we tried to sort it out without anyone being able to find out why I got the extra gallon of rum. So I'm afraid it was distributed between certain people to get rid of it.
Now, can you tell me about the rum ration anyway? How was that issued, and how much responsibility did you bear for the...
Well, I had one key to the rum cupboard, and the officer had another one, and we could only open them, of course, when both keys were put into the cupboard that we had the rum in. And then when we took the rum out, the petty officers and chief petty officers were allowed to have it neat. So I had to measure that out first for those two messes. And that went away. And then we came to the crew, and I knew how many people were entitled to rum in each mess, and arranged to have the amount put into the tub, and then two lots of water equivalent to that amount initially to make up the grog for the crew.
Now, what would a typical day be like for you at this time? A typical day's duty, from when you got up, because you wouldn't be on watch system, would you? You'd be on...
Yes, I was on a watch system.
Well, can you explain the watch system?
Well, when I was aboard the Benting, I used to have to do the morning watch on the radar. And that was from 4 o'clock in the morning till whenever, 8 o'clock at the latest, of course, I came off. Sometimes I came off earlier than that. But in general, it was 8 o'clock. Now, and then I would have my breakfast.
Now, what were your duties on the radio?
Radar, sorry. Yes, that's all right. Well, what I would do, in fact, was to sit and watch the scan. And there were three scans on there. One was a 5-mile scan, one was a 20-mile scan, and one was infinity, so to speak. And, of course, I would be switching from scan to scan, say, every 5-10 minutes, just to see if anything was happening. And, of course, if it did happen, I would have to report to the bridge what I had seen on the radar. And the officer of the watch could likewise see on his scan up on the bridge what was happening there. So that if I did find something, quite often he was aware of it, just the same time as I was.
Now, had you had any training on the radar?
None whatsoever.
And so you were just sort of helping?
Yes, I was able to say that there was a blip at such and such an angle on the radar, and that would be all that I was able to do.
Now, so, as you said, after your stint on the radar, what next?
Breakfast? Well, I would have my breakfast and then probably turn to at about 9 o'clock to go and start my work, which would be mainly book work.
And now, tell me about the bookkeeping. How onerous was the bookkeeping?
It was quite onerous because everything that went out, so to speak, had to be recorded, as indeed everything that came in when I was in harbour storing ship. Was quite an event, so to speak. And in addition to that, of course, it all had to be recorded. So I was working on book work probably from about 9 till 11.